It's lovely to be here, and to continue this morning in our series, really, on faith. I've been looking forward to this, and if you're looking forward to this, I'm sorry, you will need to be a little bit patient. Sometimes I like to do the demonstration right at the beginning, but I'm going to sort of keep you waiting for a little while on that one. But I've been looking forward to this. It's a passage that in itself, from Hebrews, doesn't suggest or doesn't offer a great deal. As you know, we're dealing with that series on faith, or those with faith, those Old Testament heroes of faith that are mentioned in Hebrews. And in chapter 11, in verse 20, it simply says, "By faith Isaac blessed Jacob and Esau in regard to their future." There endeth this morning's lesson. Clearly, there is something really implied here, isn't there? There is something that suggests we need to explore further the nature of that blessing and the relationship between Isaac and his sons. And that's what we're going to do. And we're actually going to, with that thought in our mind, we're going to be focusing this morning really rather more on the relationship between Isaac, Esau, and Jacob, and their mother, Rebekah. And that we'll find in the book of Genesis. The reality is that Isaac, although very much a feature of Old Testament history and one of the great patriarchs, there's not an awful lot written about him personally. The stories that we read about Isaac in the Old Testament more often than not surround his relationships, his relationship with his father, and then the relationship with his children. In fact, there's only one chapter that deals pretty much exclusively with Isaac himself, and that's chapter 26. But we're going to look at chapter 27 as we go through this sort of narrative, if you will. You see, Isaac was the son of Abraham, the first of the great patriarchs. And we do read in Genesis that Sarah, Abraham's wife, was unable to have a child, but in spite of her old age, miraculously God granted her the gift of a child Isaac. We're told in Scripture that his name sounds like laugh, or he laughs, which implies that here is a man who both is on the receiving end of joy and imparts joy and shares joy. And that was certainly true when he was born. He gave great joy to his mother. But later, his life wasn't always quite so smooth, like all of us, I guess. He was the inheritor, though, of a great covenant, a promise from God that his people would go on and spread and multiply and would always be blessed by God. That covenant was a wonderful thing. He was alienated, though, from his half-brother, Ishmael, through primarily avoiding any confusion over inheritance. So he suffered, a split in his family quite early on. He later married Rebekah, but Rebekah, too, couldn't give birth to any children. But again, miraculously, God granted her the gift of a child. She granted her the gift of twins, Esau and Jacob. We can read in chapter 26 that Isaac, in his adult life, became very successful, very wealthy. All that he seemed to turn his hand to was blessed by God. And he was a successful farmer. He was a successful farmer, but it seems also he was a successful digger of wells, which I suppose, if you consider the arid nature of that country, it was a pretty good blessing. If wherever you went, you could find water, you were going to be a successful man. So Isaac's life was very much touched by God. Not only did he give the covenant, did he get the covenant promise from God that he would be the father of a great nation, but within that was the promise that he would look after him and God would bless him throughout his life. So in that respect, we can understand that Isaac was a man who would have something to smile about. Isaac would be somebody, had something to laugh about. In fact, he was so successful that he actually became a threat to the ruler of the nation, the people of the Philistines. The ruler felt that he was becoming so powerful, he was that successful that he had to move. But no matter where he moved, again, he proved to be successful because God's blessing overcame all those obstacles. It's a wonderful, wonderful life. However, sadly, there was one aspect about Isaac's life that didn't go quite as smoothly, and that concerned his children, Esau and Jacob. See, Isaac's family, in one sense, was a divided one. Let's understand that. Let's read a little bit from chapter 27. In fact, I'm going to read from verse 34 of chapter 26, because I think it's relevant. It's really in the house group notes, which are available, I'm suggesting your house groups that you read right through this section. It goes up to verse 40-odd of chapter 27. Clearly, we haven't got time for that this morning. But I'm going to read from verse 34 of 26, where it says, "When Esau was 40 years old," so this is he was just about the eldest son by a couple of minutes, okay? They were twins, but Esau was the firstborn. "When Esau was 40 years old, he married Judith, daughter of Beeri the Hittite, and also Basemath, daughter of Elon the Hittite. They were the source of grief to Isaac and Rebekah. When Isaac was old and his eyes were so weak that he could no longer see, he called for Esau, his elder son, and said to him, 'My son, here I am,' Esau answered. Isaac said, 'I am now an old man and don't know the day of my death. Now then, get your weapons, your quiver and bow, and go out into the open country to hunt some wild game for me. Prepare me the kind of tasty food I like.'" Yeah, I do too. Nice game pie. Very nice. "And bring it to me to eat so that I may give you the blessing before I die." Now Rebekah was listening to as Isaac spoke to his son Esau. When Esau left for the open country to hunt game and bring it back, Rebekah said to her son Jacob, "Look, I overheard your father say to your brother Esau, 'Bring me some game and prepare some tasty food to eat so that I may give you my blessing in the presence of the Lord before I die. Now, my son, listen carefully and do what I tell you. Go out to the flock and bring me two choice young goats so I can prepare some tasty food for your father, just the way he likes it. Then take it to your father so that he may give you the blessing before he dies." Jacob said to Rebekah, his mother, "But my brother Esau is a hairy man." And I've got this amazing picture. I don't know how hirsute he actually was, but it's a remarkable picture. "And I'm a man," said Jacob, "with smooth skin. What if my father touches me? I would appear to be tricking him and would bring down a curse on myself rather than a blessing." His mother said to him, "My son, let the curse fall on me. Just do as I say, go and get them for me." So he went and got them and brought them to his mother. She prepared some tasty food just the way his father liked it. Then Rebekah took the best clothes of Esau, her elder son, which he had in the house, and put them on her younger son Jacob. She also covered his hands and the smooth part of his neck with the goat skins. Then she handed her son the tasty food and the bread she had made. Just moving on a little bit. To verse 26, we read, "Jacob brought it to him, and Isaac ate it. And he brought some wine, and he drank it. Then his father Isaac said to him, 'Come here, my son, and kiss me.' So he went to him and kissed him. Then Isaac caught the smell of his clothes. He blessed him and said, 'Ah, the smell of my son is like the smell of a field, that the Lord has blessed. May God give you a heaven's dew and an earth's richness, an abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be the Lord over your brothers, and may the son of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed." Now that episode was one that brought great discord to the family. Esau was sorely grieved that his apparent inheritance had been lost to him through the deception of Jacob and Rebekah. It was such a split that in the end, the two brothers became alienated from one another. Esau's other name, his nickname, was the Red, or Edom. And his people became known as the Edomites, because he went and he created a nation of his own, divided from his brother. And those Edomites were a thorn in the side of the Israelites for many years to come. So this little episode was one that initiated and brought about a family divided. A family that were divided between amongst one another. It's not uncommon, actually, that we come across such, well, nowadays we call them dysfunctional families, wouldn't we? It was not uncommon, and the Bible doesn't actually attempt to disguise that fact. And if we look at some of the Old Testament families, we find a lot of discord within them. We see Abraham's quarrel with Lot, or the animosity that Jacob's son Joseph experienced from his older brothers. So even these family problems went on in next generations. You see, if we look at Isaac's family, they appear to have shared very little in common. There was deception. We've just read that. There was intrigue. And this intrigue seemed to be normal practice. And it even seems to be encouraged by Rebecca, certainly. There was certainly rivalry between the brothers, and there was distrust. And sadly, we also read in the Bible that the parents exercised favoritism. We read back in chapter 25 that Esau was Isaac's favorite, and Jacob was Rebekah's favorite. It wasn't a recipe for a successful family relationship, was it? And sadly, that's a pattern we might recognize today. But what was the problem over? Well, it was over the inheritance. That was the question. Why was it a family divided? It was over an inheritance. Now, we need to understand something a little bit about the nature of family inheritance in these times, because they were complex. The inheritance wasn't just simply the reading of a will. It was rather more complex than that. It was a three-part inheritance. And those three parts involved what was called the birthright, and it was then called, and there was also the patriarchal blessing. And there was finally, uniquely to Isaac's family, the covenantal blessing. So the inheritance that these brothers were in line for was threefold. And each one of them was very significant. The first one was the birthright. Now that's simple. That's something we'd be familiar with. The birthright was in effect in traditional times the wealthy inheritance that the brothers were liable to receive. It was the wealth and prosperity that had been achieved by Isaac. But it wasn't all went to one brother and nothing to the other. What happened is, in those times, the inheritance was divided such that the elder brother would always get twice as much as anybody else. So if there were 12 brothers, it would be divided into 13 parts, and the older brother would get 2/13. All the others would get 1/13. And if it was two brothers, then one would simply get 2/3 and the other would get 1/3. So Esau and Jacob were going to inherit significant amounts of money from Isaac, but just not as much if the principal inheritance went to one or the other. It's for that reason, perhaps, that we do read that Esau wasn't that bothered about losing this birthright. It was the one aspect of his inheritance he wasn't too worried about. We read of Esau that he was a bit of a wild sort. He was an outward bound sort. He was the one who went out hunting and shooting and fishing. And perhaps the financial inheritance, knowing he was going to be wealthy anyway, was not important to him. The birthright was then something that he was happy to give away for what we now know as, well, we always call it the mess of pottage, don't we? That little bowl of lentil soup that he wanted because he was hungry. He was happy to give that part of his inheritance away because it had no meaning to him. And the meaning in the Bible for his attitude to it was one of actual contempt. It says in the Bible, most versions, you'll read, he despised his inheritance. Well, to translate more accurately, you get the thought of him contempting it. It had no value to him. It wasn't that he despised it, it just had no value to him. It wasn't important. and he was happy to give it away. In fact, it seems that that contempt extended to not just his birthright, but perhaps even the lifestyle of his parents. Because the lifestyle and the values of his parents, he also seems to have rejected. I read from verse 34 of chapter 26 that it wasn't just his birthright that he was willing to give away and to turn his back on, but it was the lifestyle and the values of his mother and his father. It said, if you remember, that in the marriage that he engaged in to two Hittite women, he brought great grief to Isaac and Jacob. So his contempt seems to have been not only for his financial inheritance, but for the lifestyle and for the faith, perhaps, or beliefs of his parents. This passage brings very many, very current, very today experiences that parents have, I feel, that many of us may have encountered situations where children don't adopt the lifestyle, perhaps, or even the beliefs of their parents. And if we know of that situation in our lives, and if we share that experience through others who've gone through that, then we'll know that the pain that that can cause, the pain that and the distress that that children can bring when they appear to want to go their own way. And that's a pain we need to share. And today, as with many things, if this is something that you experience, then we, as Jacob, Isaac did, have to bring it to God, because that's only where our solace and peace can come. Later we'll look at some practical or some Bible-given help, how we can deal with this. But if that is your experience, and it still brings you pain today, then perhaps you need to share that. And that might mean that you want to share it and talk with perhaps myself or with Rob after the service and have some prayer about that, because it's so very, very real. And when we read it in the life of Isaac and Rebecca, we can begin to understand that hurt is not just for today, it's an experience of parents throughout all generations. This birthright then, the lifestyle itself, was not of great meaning to Esau, but what was one of the other blessings, the patriarchal blessing. You see, the patriarchs, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in his turn, all gave a formal blessing to their children, and in Jacob's case, even to grandchildren. This patriarchal blessing was a very big thing, and to receive one's father's patriarchal blessing was considered high honor indeed. And losing a blessing to people of these times was equivalent to a curse upon them. So if you couldn't get from your father this blessing, this patriarchal fatherly blessing, then your life was going to be diminished significantly as a result of failing to achieve it or receive it. These Old Testament patriarchal blessings were a heartfelt wish from the father for the future of the child. And with it came often prophetic words, title, and even status. The actual status and title came with this patriarchal blessing. And can you imagine a family that was so blessed by God, how much more significant this patriarchal blessing actually was? And when Isaac did bless Jacob with this, we can read of something of that. Later on, we read in chapter 27, may God give you heaven's dew and earth's richness and abundance of grain and new wine. May nations serve you and peoples bow down to you. Be Lord over your brothers, and may the sons of your mother bow down to you. May those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. That was the nature of the patriarchal blessing. And this is the blessing that caused the problem. This is the one that Esau was not happy to give away, nor was it the blessing that Rebecca wanted to see go to Esau. She wanted it to go to her favorite, Jacob. And it was the loss of this blessing through deception that caused the distress within the family. Further, that this blessing was always given verbally, orally, and once given, it was binding. There was no going back. So once this blessing had been given to Jacob, there was no hope for Esau. He lost this main patriarchal blessing. And it was for this reason that Rebecca was determined to do something about it. And this is where she starts to plot and to scheme to bring about the blessing for her own favorite, Jacob. So this is the big one. But there was a third, wasn't there? And that was the covenant blessing. That was a third aspect. And this one is that very significant and unique inheritance that was that of the family of Abraham. It was this blessing that that his family, the family and nations that would result from his family of Abraham, would be particularly blessed by God, and that they would become the fathers of a great nation. In chapter 28, Isaac expresses finally this wish for Isaac when he says, "May God give you your descendants the blessing given to Abraham, so that you may take possession of the land where you now reside as a foreigner, that the land that God gave to Abraham." Here Isaac simply expresses his wish, because this covenant blessing, it was not for the father to give to the son. This was the blessing that God was to give to the son. But here Isaac asks for that blessing. And it was a wish that was confirmed by God in verses 13 and 15 of 28. "I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham and the God of Isaac. I will give you, your descendants, the land on which you are lying. I am with you and will watch over you wherever you go, and I will bring you back to this land. I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you." That was the third part of Jacob's inheritance. So you see what I mean? It was a complex inheritance, but out of which came division, dissent, and discord. And really, these consequences were made worse, I feel, by the success of Rebecca's unlikely deception. It's a bit unlikely, but if you think about it, you think, "Oh, you know, how did he get away with that?" But he did, and the deception was a success. Jacob received that significant blessing. And yet, you know, if you look at Rebecca, you start to wonder why she bothered. Because previously, when she was still pregnant and the twins were still in her womb, she went to God and asked for a word from God. And in that word from God, God promised her that the younger of the sons would have authority over the elder of the sons. So Rebecca had already received a promise of Jacob's greater significance. And yet, it did not appear to be enough for her. And she wasn't happy with that, and she began her own scheming. And worse still, she involved Jacob himself in her conniving. It seems to me that it was an unnecessary deception. The lie begat lie, as my grandmother used to say to me. And along with that, she used to say this phrase, which always used to get me when I was a kid, you know, because it seemed to me as though my grandma always knew that when I told a porky. Do you know what I mean? "Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive." It was very true in Rebecca's case, because it was really all unnecessary. All that eavesdropping, all that conniving was unnecessary. Even without her interfering, Jacob had already been promised the inheritance by God. It was unnecessary, but it resulted in discord and animosity for the brothers for generations. It also resulted in Jacob having to go into exile for 20 years himself because of the animosity of Esau. Jacob and Isaac did not have enough faith in God at this stage. They were unwilling or unable to trust him. Jacob had a long way to go and a few tussles with God, it has to be said, before his faith was sufficient to him, and I use Rob's phrase from last week, to let God, or let God and let go, or let go and let God. It took a long time for Jacob to get there, but he got there in the end. Had they been able to do so much earlier, perhaps the life of this family would have been a more peaceful one. I suppose we have to ask ourselves the questions, don't we? How much trust do we place in God? Especially with our families. We talked a little earlier about families that are struggling. How much faith do we put in God? There's a prayer we say very often. It's called the Lord's Prayer. And in it, there's a little phrase that's easy to say and so difficult to do. And it is that one, thy will be done. Yeah. Thy will be done. Is our faith great enough today to be able to say that for our family? In my family, Lord, thy will be done. Or do we start plotting and scheming like Rebecca? We do so, I'd suggest, at our peril. God doesn't expect us to stop using our intelligence. He expects us to do what we believe to be best. But at what stage are we willing to let go and let God? We move towards the end, but we've got to remember that perhaps one of the great lessons from here is that the Old Testament's blessing was not a reflection of the merit of Abraham's family. God's blessing to his family was not because of what Isaac or Rebekah had done. It was a reflection of the merit of Abraham himself. That was the Old Testament promise. The New Testament promise is that God's New Testament blessing is not a reflection of the merit of those who follow Jesus, but a reflection of the merit of Jesus himself. And perhaps that's a lesson we need to learn. Okay, I'm going to come to this quickly, and my time is going. I'm conscious of that. This is a little demonstration, perhaps of that principle. Perhaps of that principle. I've got Christ, sin, and me represented by these beakers. It says in the Bible that if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves, and the truth is not in us. There is sin in each of us, and that sin colours our lives. But it also says in the Bible that Jesus was our atoning sacrifice for our sins. That was the nature of the communion service. That Christ in our life cleans us of sin. It also says in the Bible that God placed upon Jesus the sin for you and I. That God placed sin on Christ. But there is no sin in Christ. Further, in the Bible, it says that he is the atoning sacrifice for the sins of the whole world. That so loved the world that he died for us. That Christ comes into the world. And sin itself is destroyed. That's the nature of our new covenant promise. I wonder how real that is to you. A little bit of science, but it shows a very clear message of Christ's overwhelming power over our sin, that he is the atoning sacrifice for each one of us. If in your life today you ask the question, what do I hand on to my children? We have to first say is that we are not going to always get it right. We're not perfect parents. But Christ is the perfect Lord. And if we can allow him authority in the lives of our children and our family, then our fears can be laid aside as well. Take encouragement. Take encouragement in the Lord our God and give him your life. Give it into his hands today. Not only your life, but the life of your family. Amen.